Welcome to the My Family Coach podcast. I'm Claire, and each week you'll find me interviewing a guest expert to find out more about the tricky world of child behaviour, all in handy 15-minute-ish bite-sized chunks. At the end of each episode, we'll send you away with three practical tips. It's perfect for parents, carers, and professionals working with children. And if this episode leaves you wanting more, you can watch, listen, and read our wide range of free resources on the My Family Coach website. And you can download really handy free resources from the My Family Coach website, like our My Family Journal app, which is an app where you can track your child's behaviour and look for patterns, see what works, what hasn't worked, and it's a really useful tool for helping support your child's behaviour at home. You can download that at www.myfamilycoach.com/journal. I'm joined today by Jamie Douglas. Jamie is a senior manager in the Children, Young People and Families team at Response, which is a mental health and complex needs charity that works across the Thames Valley. He manages a range of projects from supporting young people who have been hospitalised for their mental health to lower level preventative community work. Prior to working for Response, Jamie was a secondary school English teacher and pastoral lead in a range of schools for 12 years. And today, Jamie and I are talking about the five ways to well-being. Enjoy the episode. Hi, Jamie. How are you?
Yes, I'm good. Thank you. Thanks for having me. How are you?
I'm really well, thank you. I did just say the immortal words. I can't remember how to record It's Been Christmas. Sometimes having a break makes your brain a bit fried, doesn't it?
I have to get back into the routines of things.
You do. And I guess it's a really tenuous link to what we're going to talk about today in brain development and impact on the brain and mental health. But specifically, we're talking about the five ways to well-being, which I know is something that you've used in schools that you've worked with. And I guess we're thinking about how parents and carers might use that at home. Before we go off onto what is the five ways to well-being, just tell us a little bit about yourself and your experience with this topic.
Yeah, absolutely. So I work for a mental health charity called Response. We largely work in the kind of Thames Valley region, particularly Oxfordshire, but we're also kind of in other areas around there. I'm in the Children and Young People and Families team. So we have a number of services that we run that support in schools sometimes or in the community. We work alongside sort of NHS services, so alongside the sort of statutory services. So I've been doing that for nearly 4 years. And then before that, for 12 years, I was a secondary school teacher, particularly looking at the sort of pastoral side of things. So the well-being kind of came into that. So when I was looking to leave teaching, I'd done a lot of work already in mental health and well-being in a very unofficial way as a teacher. So then moved into a more official way working in a mental health charity. So I've always been interested in young people and how we can look after them in a very general way, but also mental health particularly, because I think there's so much stress in everyone's lives, particularly young people. So it's about kind of giving them the tools to support themselves. So I'm really all about that kind of approach to things.
Yeah, it's really interesting to move from teaching across to, you know, working in a charity, doing the role that you do. And I think sometimes there's a misconception about the role of teaching, but, you know, we all, even if we don't have an official pastoral role, have so many pastoral responsibilities, and the care and well-being of the children and young people that we work with is, you know, up there in importance. So, yeah, it doesn't surprise me the step across, but it might to some listening. Thinking about our topic, Jamie, as well, if you've got a book recommendation for us.
Yeah, so the book I'm recommending is called Inventing Ourselves, and the subtitle is The Secret Life of the Teenage Brain by Sarah Jane Blakemore. And this, for me, is just sort of my personal education is about, I want to know a little bit more about the science and about the development of the brain, because I think that is so important. So this book was a way of kind of me learning some of that stuff. And I wouldn't say at all I'm anywhere near an expert on the biology and the development of brains, but it was a really helpful book of getting myself into the understanding what's going on in our heads that is, yeah, biologically driven and driven by hormones and all that stuff. And then how that displays when you have a child and young person in front of you.
I know it doesn't happen very often on the podcast. I normally say, oh, I must read that one and add it to my humongous list of books. But I have actually read that one. And the, like, for parents, carers listening, practitioners listening, it is so good because it is digestible and it's readable, whereas so many of the books about neuroscience are either like are too simplified. I mean, there's quite a lot of literature now sort of debunking that the Truman kind of brain model, with that idea of just splitting the brain into three parts. And now, you know, the more that people know, the more that people understand that, you know, we think that's too simplified. So for parents, carers, I really think that that is a good balance of having enough science so it's more plausible, but not too much that you're sort of, I don't know, keeping your eyes open with matchsticks as you read it.
Yeah, I think one of the things that she does really well in the book is sort of challenges our stereotypes, or it was particularly aimed at teenage brains and sort of adolescents, but it challenges the stereotypes that we all have of teenagers that we probably were on the end of when we were teenagers. And now we start to develop that a bit, that they're lazy, that they don't want to do things, that they're not motivated. And actually within the book, I think what she does really well is actually says, but there's science behind this. You know, it's not a case of, you know, they're just moody teenagers. It's because their brain is developing and changing. And she drops in the scientific terms like the pruning of the different things in the brains, but you still understand it and get the idea that actually when your 12, 13 year old is suddenly not what they were like when they were 10 or 9, there's a science behind that. It's not just the case that they've suddenly flipped a switch into that stereotype of like Kevin the teenager from their old Harry Enfield sketch. There is a real science behind this. And I think it's, as a parent myself, my kids are nowhere near teenage, but you start thinking, okay, I need to think about this. Just, you know, cut them a bit of slack a little bit, think a little bit about those stereotypical things, challenge myself and realize that there's a scientific reason for the way that they're acting.
And that can help with compassion and empathy, can't it, for our loved ones, where, you know, they might be, there was a really great phrase with Joe Grace, who I interviewed, the straw that broke the camel's back. And, you know, when you hear a phrase and you've never really pictured it or actually comprehended what it means, I was like, oh, I actually get it when I picture it in my head. But as a parent carer, you can feel like that, can't you? Where if one more thing happens, like everything's going to collapse. But knowing where it might come from, knowing that teenagers' brains are going through certain things, I think that can be I suppose that can help with compassion and understanding and you know, help us in the moment. I'm thinking about well-being and the five ways to well-being, and I suppose perhaps linking this to the book in some way, that with young people's well-being, how does the teenage years perhaps impact well-being? I know that's a huge question, but there must be certain things going on that are going to have an impact in those teenage years.
I think the biggest thing at the highest level is it's a massive time for change in the teenage years. I mean, because you're thinking about, you've got the scientific side of things, you've got the brain changing and developing, you've got what she talks about, the circadian rhythm of our sleep patterns being a little bit different. You know, we all have that stereotype of young people, they don't want to get up at 7 in the morning when they were toddlers, they probably did, but actually the science behind that. So they've got all that change in the biology and the brain structure. You then throw in school changes, going from a small primary school to a big secondary school. You've got the hormones coming in, so you've got kind of, you know, sexual desires and interest in relationships and all of that kind of, so it's just massive amounts of change. I mean, if you start listing it, it's almost unfair that we inflict all of these changes on people of that age all in one go, but that's just the way that, you know, biology and life is. So I think well-being is hugely important for all of us, but particularly for adolescents and children in that kind of stage in their life, because you've got so many challenges coming in. And that, you know, that's not even to mention social media and the social pressures and everything. So children can spiral really quickly. They can go from a relatively settled, good place to being in a kind of really kind of crisis level place really quickly. And because of all these changes that's going on. So I think well-being and just keeping on top of it is so important. And also it sets you up for the rest of your life. So when you are kind of when you've settled down in your 20s and 30s and your brain isn't going through that growth as much, you've got things you think, actually, I've been doing this for a while. And we talked at the beginning about the habits after Christmas.
Yeah.
It's great to be in habits in your well-being. So to get into habits of I'm gonna, this is something I can go to when things get tough. So if you instill those habits in younger ages, then it makes for a more settled kind of 20s, 30s, and into adulthood.
I love the way that you're not mentioning 40s, because that's where I'm at,
Well,
Jamie,
me
just so
too.
you
Yeah.
know. No, it's so important, the habits, bringing those out, but also really equipping children younger with the skills to be able to cope in those times where things aren't so easy. And this is, I mean, maybe parents, carers will be interested in this question as well, because I'm thinking about your charity and I'm thinking about COVID and the impact of well-being as a kind of another thing. So we've talked about the teenage years and all of those aspects, but I think there's also something around COVID and the impact on well-being that that would have had, but I think it's less talked about now. Maybe people just don't want to talk about COVID anymore and lockdowns, and you know, have moved on. But I know for me personally, I've seen a lot of changes, not only in my own family and the impact of that and their well-being, but in the settings I work with and families that I support as well.
Yeah, I mean, COVID, there were so many things going on COVID-wise. But one thing that was particularly interesting for me, but also worrying, was there was a lot of rise in eating disorder cases that came through during COVID. The stereotype is often girls that are kind of the teenage, and that is the biggest number, but just across the board, because a lot of it, I mean, this is not maybe research driven because the research hasn't been done yet, but a lot of it from the practitioners was it was the only way of establishing some sort of habit and control in your life. So if you were a teenager who you're not seeing your friends anymore, you're not going to school, you're being locked down in your house as everyone was, you can't control anything. So the one thing you could control was your diet and your exercise. And that led to quite a lot of young people spiraling in an eating disorder kind of way. And I think if you then move out from that to other mental health conditions, it was again routine and habit being disrupted and not knowing how to cope because you're out of control. We were all out of control because obviously we're all sat there behind the TV screens listening to the Prime Minister tell us we can't go out, we can go out. But as adults, we still have some sort of ownership over that. Whereas a teenager or a young person more generally living in a house, your parents are also telling you you can't do things. No, you can't see your friends. You can't go out. You've been out once today. So you lose all of that kind of control. And it could be really damaging. I think some of the stuff of COVID, we're not going to see the impact properly for years because it will just be there. Some young people will get on absolutely fine. Some young people coped
Exactly,
through
yeah.
COVID like it didn't even happen. Some young people are still dealing with it. So I think it's all at different levels. But we shouldn't write it off now that we're not wearing masks anymore and not, following rules. We need to still think that that's a massive part of young people's lives, particularly if you think about, how young they are. It could be sort of a third of their life was in COVID. Whereas for us as adults, it was a blip of 2 years. So we've got to, I think we can't forget that even as we move on.
Yeah, I think it's such an important message, and I'm sure parents and carers, you know, will feel the same, that the impact on well-being is, you know, is ongoing for some individuals. Obviously, as you said, there's going to be a spectrum of impact, and it's important to, I guess, to hold that in mind, that that might still be something that's causing dips in well-being, certainly. Tell me a bit more about the five ways to well-being model, because we talked a little bit off air about it, and it's something that I've not actually come across, and yeah, don't know a huge amount about it.
I don't historically, I don't know how long it's been going, but it's something that was put together, I think, particularly by the NHS and involving organisations like Mind, obviously National Mental Health charities. And when you break it down, they are very simple things that probably sometimes we know what to do, but it's a way of framing the ways that we can look after ourselves. So it's five things, which is really kind of an easy number to remember. And the five ways are connecting. So that one is about maintaining relationships, connecting with each other, making sure you talk to other people. And we know, as if you watch a lot of the mental health messaging that comes out through the media, there's always, you need someone to talk to, you should go and talk to someone. So that's very, it's a simple thing, but it's making sure that we remember to connect. The next one is being active. So again, that's a message that I think we hear quite a lot. Make sure you're doing exercise, look after your physical health as well as your mental health. But it's again bringing that physical health and mental health together and actually just seeing its health. I think we're getting better as
No,
a
that's
society
interesting.
at doing that and just seeing health, but we do still separate it. I've got mental health issues and I've got physical health issues, but this step of the five ways is to bring the two together and say, if I go for a run or I go for a walk, actually I'm going to probably feel better mentally after it as well. And then the next ones are a bit more, maybe a bit more obscure. And therefore it's good to have them in the list of the five ways because it gives, it sparks us to think of things. So one of them is taking notice. So that's the idea. Sometimes we call it mindfulness, but it's just being aware and being present in the moment and thinking about, can I do something for now and not think about all the things that are going on in my life? But also going out for a walk and taking notice of things and spotting things and talking about them, not being on our phones all the time. We're actually looking around and noticing things. Learning is a big one. So that's the fourth one, is the idea of, challenging your brain. I mean, I know when I talk in schools about the five ways to well-being, which I've done a lot in the past, when you say, oh, you should do some learning, kids' faces drop. It's like, well, I'm in school learning. You're telling me to go and do some learning in my own time. But that learning can come through YouTube videos, TikTok videos. It's just learning a new skill. It's just sparking something in our brain that we haven't thought about before, which therefore forces our brain to work differently. It also distracts us. If I'm watching a video about how to do sewing, then I'm not thinking about my friendship issues if I'm a young person. And the last one is giving. So giving is the idea of actually thinking about others, giving some time to other people. Because again, if we're doing that sort of approach to things, then we're distracting from ourselves. We're just sort of being a bit more positive in our outlook. So all five together, within them, we do a lot of these things. I think what's really helpful for parents and carers is if you've tried one thing and it's not working, you can go back to the five ways and think, okay, what am I missing here? So it might be our obvious thing to say to our child is, oh, why don't you go for a run? Or why don't you go and kick the ball around in the garden? And they might say, actually, I don't want to do that. I'm not enjoying that. And you, as a parent, you might feel stumped and think, well, what else do I suggest? Because my child is clearly struggling at the moment and that's not working. You can go to the five ways and you think, okay, can I be a bit more creative here? Is there a learning thing I can get them to do? Or can I do a take notice thing with them? Or can I get them to do some volunteering to give back, which will help their well-being as well as helping other people? So it just frames everything. It's not revolutionary in itself, but it's really clever in the way that it just frames how we look after ourselves.
It does sound really fascinating, the five ways to well-being, but I just did a time check, Jamie, and I've already overrun, I believe, which is amazing. Could you just finish off with three top tips?
Absolutely. So I think my first tip is linked to the five ways, and that's just really about the idea of understanding what they are, and coming up with activities around them. So as a parent carer, you can think for your child or you can brainstorm with them. So that's my first tip, is just really to embrace this model. A lot of schools do use it, so it is out there. So really kind of bringing it into your learning is my first tip. My second one is linking back to the book, really, was understanding the role of brain development. Give yourself a break as a parent, because actually, when you're trying something that's not working, it could be that their brain's not ready for it yet. But also giving them a break because they might be going through brain development. So, and it doesn't have to be reading books about it. You can look up online and just look at sort of snapshots of what the brain's doing. And then the third one is, I guess, bringing the two together a little bit is having a well-being sort of toolkit that to go to. And that could be a physical toolkit. It could be a box with things in it that when things get tough, you can go to that box and you've already thought about what you're going to do. Because often when you're in a low moment or you're feeling really anxious, your brain's not thinking about what can I do to make things better. It's often thinking, oh, I'm feeling really low. I don't want to do anything. But if you've got a pre-prepared toolkit of different things, you can go to that and go, okay, well, I'll get my coloring book out and do some mindful coloring, or I'll get my trainers out and I'll go for a walk. So having a think about what you can do to prepare for the tough times, I think is really important.
Having that plan, isn't it? I think that is really, really important, and great tips, Jamie. Thank you so much for your time, and I hope we get to catch up soon.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to the My Family Coach podcast. Thank you for joining us as we lift the lid on the challenging world of child behaviour. Remember to subscribe to listen to all our episodes, and there's heaps more helpful support for all your parenting needs on the My Family Coach website. Thanks again, and I'll see you next time.